Yes, good morning. Those of you who are here this morning and didn't come yesterday, I have to apologize if you sort of come into the middle of everything, because we had a good discussion yesterday, and what we are doing now is really the last little part of our seminar yesterday. And the first hour we will actually connect some thoughts to what we did yesterday about evangelism in our time, and then we will go on to the leadership topics. I think maybe some of you have come for that also. I'd like to start with a text, and these famous words from Jesus in John 14. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. The whole idea of truth is changing. We spoke a little bit about that yesterday. And that the way we have looked at truth in the Adventist Church doesn't always correspond with how a new generation look at truth. And when Adventism started, there was a great optimism that we could understand truth, all truth more or less, as because science would help us. And even, you know, if we just studied the Bible enough, we would get all the answers. And if everybody studied their Bibles enough, they would come to the same conclusions as we came to. This is not how a younger generation look at how you arrive at things. Actually, and the new thinking in the postmodern mind is that you cannot find truth in that way. Even if truth exists, and it does, they believe truth exists, but the problem is, can I really know it? How can I be sure about anything? And since there are so many different ideas about what truth is, how can I arrive at it? And people become not cynical in a negative way, but more, I just have to find my way through life. I just have to find my truth. I just have to live my life. You know, and the fact that, you know, yesterday the dietist says that we should eat light products, and today they say we should not eat light products because there's much other stuff in it, so it's unhealthy, it's better to eat some more fat. And then some theories about how the universes fit together, and then we had the big shock 1 year ago when somebody was challenging Einstein's theories of how the universes fit together. And you know, the things that were true yesterday are not necessarily true today or tomorrow. And even we who study the Bible, we have to acknowledge that there are other Christians who read this Bible and just as much as us, and they disagree with us. So there is there's a different approach to truth, and what we have called, we have the truth. That is an expression that doesn't make sense to many people. You can say you have truth, but to say you have the truth is a very big statement, and it sort of includes everything. And people who say they have the truth are probably seen as ignorant, or at least they're looked upon with very skeptical eyes, because who in the world can say they know it all? They have the answers. And of course, this is not what we have meant as Adventists when we said we have the truth. We are saying we have a truth for our time. We are not saying we know everything, but it could sound like that. And in this relation, in this context, I think the way Jesus talks about truth in this text is interesting, because here Jesus talked about himself as truth. And that is actually a way of thinking about truth that fits well in with postmodern people, because they also see that life, you have a truth in your life. The life that I live is my truth. And I'm not sure, I don't think that's exactly what Jesus meant, but it is more in sync with what people are thinking today, that truth is coming out of a person and truth is coming out of a life. And it's life. Truth is not only what you can write on in a statement. No, truth is a life that is lived, and that is the expression of truth. How do you feel about that? Most of you were here yesterday and we touched on this, but this is a whole different approach. And the optimism that was in the world when Adventism was started is not there anymore. Many people are questioning whether we can, what can we know at all about anything, really.
That would sound very discouraging.
Yeah, it sounds very discouraging. It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Apostles, they knew what they believed. They were Jews. They had a long history.
Yeah.
They were dealing with Gentiles who knew nothing about them, who were virtually facing a similar situation.
Yes.
Dealing with people who had no concept about what they might have heard of them, but maybe the Gentiles hadn't.
Mm.
So they had a clearer playing field than we do. I think we've got a very confused playing field, and it's very difficult to get through it.
It is, and part of this seminar this weekend is that we have to acknowledge that it is hard and it is difficult. But
because of that, situation where we're dealing with is different.
Are we on now? Oh, thank you. But. Maybe that when I say it like that, it sounds negative, and it's sort of like, what are we going to do with this? But on the other hand, this is an opportunity, because people will understand truth in this way. You know, in the sense that if you start to follow Jesus, the things that he was true in his life will come true in your life. And actually, maybe this is just one example, but it was James Cress who was the leader of the ministerial department in the General Conference. He died, sadly, very young, 3 years ago, maybe. He said, when I preached on the Sabbath, I showed the texts that show that the Sabbath is right. But he said, that wasn't enough. I said to people, keep the Sabbath for 3 months. Try it. And then the argument that is also a biblical argument, taste and see that the Lord is good. And he said to these people, and he did the same with tithing. He said, tithe for 3 months and see if not God is blessing your life, and you will find out that you can do just as well with your 90% as your 100%. And he is blessing your life, and you will feel better about your life, giving. And that was his argument. And he even said, if you pay tithe for 3 months and it doesn't work for you, I will pay you back to the people who are coming to his teaching. Did you record that?
I can understand that people may have a different perception of truth,
yeah,
and that it can develop, but God doesn't have different levels of truth. God only has what is true.
God only has what is true.
Yeah.
And they would agree with that. Their question is, can you understand that? And can you claim to understand that you understand the truth that God has? Because they're not questioning the fact that there is truth in the universe, and if they don't believe God, in God, that he knew the truth. Their question is, how can I know what is true? And since history and experience tells us there are so many answers to the same questions, that tells them that it's not so easy to find that truth, and I just have to admit that maybe what I see is very limited and what I believe in is very distorted. But still, this is my life, and my life is my truth. I live what I believe, and that is my truth. And it's somehow a game with words, but it's also a different perception of what we really can know. It's not the optimism that we can actually find the right answers, even if we try. But it's true, and I think this thinking is also creeping into our church, and I'm not saying it's bad necessarily, because in the Sabbath school classes that I go to, well, in Scandinavia, here, people react to the "we have the truth" statement. Do you have that discussion here? And people say, no, we are not, we cannot say we have the truth. We can say that we have truth. And that really reflects the thinking and how people speak in our time. And it's just how, it's not about right or wrong, it's about how we define things. And it reflects that very thing, that we don't want to be arrogant and too self-confident about what we know, because that is not nice. That's not the okay. But the opportunity I wanted to present by this is really to present is better than to present a theory. And we can present Jesus Christ as a person and a life, and his life is real. He lived his life, and the story of Jesus is there. And that is also our starting point for our thinking. Okay? I quote Pauline a few more times. But since we're talking about how we operate in our time, and again, we did a lot of work yesterday, so I'm just trying to fill in some spaces that we have from yesterday. A sense of brokenness, that is very real in our society, and this is a place where the healing ministry of Jesus and the healing ministry of the church is so much needed. And brokenness comes from mainly from broken relationships. You know, there are many families are broken. I guess the divorce rate here is almost 50%, like there it is most of the Western world, 40, 50, thereabouts. But not only couples, but you have parents divorced from their children. So many children do not see their parents, and so many parents do not see their children. You have brothers and sisters who don't talk to each other for years and years and years because of conflicts. There is so much brokenness in society. And really, this ability to handle relationships in our time is a disease. And of course, it's not a disease that is contagious. But the social issues of our time is really where I think the health message is really needed today. Once upon a time, and again things are changing, once upon a time we had the contagious diseases, and then we got penicillin and all that, and And once upon a time, our health ministry was to care for the sick, you know, in that sense. When we got ways to control infections, you know, we moved on, and we got all the lifestyle issues, people dying of heart attacks and all that sort, because we had a change of, went from industry and physical labor to sitting around, and so we had all the cardiovascular stuff and heart attacks and obesity and all that sort of thing, and it's still with us. And the church did a lot of ministry to people, helping to eat better and to get exercise, and we had the sanatoriums and stuff. But now I think we are into a third wave, or maybe I'm not a specialist in this, but the social issues and the hurt in relationships that are in our society are enormous. And the government is really taking care of a lot of the first one, with our hospitals, and we can all go to the doctor for free and that sort of thing. The second one, there's so much more information about that from the government today, about how you live healthy, and a lot of that which we said, you know, we have said for 100 years, is being told by the government today. Not exactly the same, but a lot of it is there. But the government and our councils, and they do not have these resources at all, and maybe that's more or less impossible to handle this brokenness. And I think for the church to go in a healing ministry in the world today is should be focused up there. And it's just like we talked about the sanatoriums and all our institutions yesterday. You know, we had like in Denmark, we lost Scottsborg and we lost the Nutana. You know, back in 1926, I think it was, Nutana started in Denmark, and what did they do? The first thing they did was to produce margarine, so that to give people an alternative to butter, which was, and then we started coming with other products, and we gave people vegetarian alternatives to chicken and beef and even bacon, and that sort of thing, so that people could eat something that would had a similar taste but was different and a better alternative, hopefully. But we have lost all that. I don't think it matters that much, because there are so many companies producing perfectly all right, soya sausages or whatever it is, you know. It's not a mission for the church anymore. But at the very beginning, we did pioneer work, going up front and saying, we are teaching people something they need, and in our time. And I think it was very relevant. And when we started our sanatoriums, it was very relevant. What would really be relevant today is for the church to start simple programs for people who are broken. And it doesn't have to be, you know, deep therapy. You can just get people together, like the AAs, you know, talking together, support each other, talk about their lives, helping each other with practical things, single mothers or fathers, or, you know, helping each other to coordinate their lives, transport, you know, this sort of thing. And just talk about their lives and get into relationships again. Does that make sense? So maybe we are moving from physical health to mental health, and that is even closer to the spiritual lives, our spiritual lives. You know, talk about relationships and community, and the church has a strong thing to carry into people's lives there. Humility and authenticity. That's maybe more a value than it is a need. But where should I start with that one? Yeah, it's a value. Humility in this context, when we talk about the witness of the church, again, maybe I'm repeating myself, but it is not the person who comes out strongly and say, I can tell you all that you need to know, that are trustworthy today. It is the person who say, I am struggling too. Let's talk together. What have we found out about living? What have you found out about living? What have I found out about living? What is my life like, you know? And I say, you know, I'm not coming out and say, I'm this great prayer person, you know, God answers all my prayers. I say, no, get real, you know, say, I'm just trying to find my way. I pray, God helps me. I can see some points in my life where God has changed my life. At other times, I'm really struggling to see how it all fits together. That is a true answer for most of us, I think. Get real. And you know, I remember coming to when I was a kid and I went to the campaigns in Oslo. One meeting was usually to present the Adventist church what it was like, and then they will show all the fantastic pictures from all around the world of our, you know, Loma Linda, Andrews University, huge places with thousands of students or patients. And then there, all the mission stations in Africa and so forth. And we're saying, look at all the great things we are doing and look at this fantastic organization that is called the Adventist Church. You would just long to be part of this fantastic organization. And today, people will say, you know, it's not the same thing. But show me a community where I can sit with 10 people who are real people, who talk about pain, who talk about real life, who have issues in their life. They have a story, they have been through a divorce, or they have seen their kids fail, and they have sickness in their homes, and they have, you know, this is what is happening to everybody, right? In the church. You know, when we look at our children, between us, you know, there are some alcoholics, there are some people who have other problems, there are some with mental illnesses. When we look at our own lives, you know, we have made failures in our work, we have made failures in our marriages, and this is life. And just talk about life, reality, and then truth is happening in this mess that is called life. This is how people think about it. Maybe you don't think about it like that, but when we are genuine, humble, and we just say the truth, because the truth is not about what is the perfect solution of God. The truth is also that my life is like this. That is part of the truth. It's not God's truth, but it's my truth, and it's, you know, and people are looking for that. So we don't need to present ourselves as the fantastic church with all the solutions. We just have to be real people that find meaningful answers to our situation in the Word of God and trying to follow Jesus Christ. And He is a real person who lived a real life. People search for identity and purpose. And this is kind of double thing, because many people, as I said to start with, are disillusioned with life, but maybe they don't even think that they can have an identity and a purpose, but there's a longing in the human heart for it. And I think that is my Christian belief, that coming to Jesus Christ gives you identity and purpose in your life. And that is something that we can offer. And even if we, you know, it's not sort of putting everybody into a box, starting a journey with Jesus Christ and following the scriptures and the values and the message there gives you a new identity and a purpose for your life. What was his name again? A few months ago, there was this a lot, on, particularly on the internet, a little bit in the news, about a Hollywood actor that became an Adventist. It was a young man in the series Two and a Half Men. It's really the series is not very much to watch. I've seen sort of 10 minutes here and there about it. And it's, if you've seen an episode or two, you have seen enough. You get it up to here. It's basically sexual jokes. And this Two and a Half Men is the youngest, which is the half man. He's a 19-year-old fellow who actually came in contact with the Adventist Church in California and became a Seventh-day Adventist. And it's quite... I can't remember his name now. I should have done...
His name is Jones.
Yeah, Jones. Yeah. And it was... from every side there was criticism about him, because the film industry and they criticized him, and criticized the fact that he had come into this sect, and his parents were afraid that the pastor in this church, or it was not the pastor actually, it was a layperson who had very much influence over this guy, that he was manipulating him. And then there were other Adventists that was sad that he came into a more extreme Adventist thing, and everybody had something to say about this guy who had become a Christian. And I don't know whether everything is healthy about it. There's a lot of conspiracy theories around, I think, where he is. But for him, it was that he had found Jesus Christ, and he had found meaning and purpose in his life. And it was quite interesting to see, I saw on the internet, how he spoke about his new faith. And he is just one out of many who are looking for purpose and identity. And I think Jesus gives this. The identity people are searching for is not to be a member of the Communist Party or the Conservatives or even the Pentecostals or the Adventists. They might be that, but they say that my identity is mine, and I am a unique person, and I am not willing to enter into any box that somebody has prepared for me. I have my journey, and I will do it my way. But I would like to be together with you. So there is also a difference in how people usually became before. We talked about that last night. Coming in as a member, taking the package, or searching for your unique identity as a person. But we can help them find that in Jesus Christ, and they do. Need for community speaks for itself. I think we talked about that a little bit yesterday. There are so many lonely people around because of the families that are splitting up, and I read one research in Stockholm, and this is when I worked in Sweden. Quite exactly 50% of the households in the whole city of Stockholm, that is 1.2 million people, 0.5% of the households were one person. So many lonely people in our cities, but anywhere, because of broken families and relationships, and people live by themselves. And the need for community is enormous. And of course, it's not one of our... we have a doctrine about the church in our 28 doctrines, but it's certainly a so central teaching of the Bible, the fellowship of the people of God. And it's a basic human need. And I know you appreciate it a lot here, because you have a nice fellowship in your church, and it's worth sharing. Yes, and I think I commented on inclusiveness
We had a section on that yesterday, exclusiveness, inclusiveness.
Let me just take a little break here. What are you thinking? And those of you who were here yesterday, you know, maybe you have questions. Maybe there are issues you would like to discuss a little bit. And, you know, I can talk more, but often the most interesting things that are said in response to questions and feedback. Yeah?
Do I need the mic? Okay. This is a question which came to my mind. I thought, how do we handle this? There's quite a dichotomy here. As Adventists, we say we believe we've got a special message, okay?
Yeah.
The judgment, the second coming of Jesus. The end is coming and there's going to be a judgment whether we like it or not.
Yes.
Because the end of the world will happen. Now, how far do we go in being nicey-nicey? As I agree with you. I mean, we're trying to do that kind of thing here all the time.
Yeah.
We're desperately trying to help because there's a desperate need. How far do we go in that side and not, if as many people believe, they follow the writings, for example, the Council of Ellen White, etc., etc., this is a desperate need. The world has to be warned. The Bible teaches that. The prophecies teach that. How far do we go? There's two opposites here. Where do we strike the balance?
Yes. It's a good question.
I don't know the answer. I would like to.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you, Bernie. Thank you. Yeah, and I am not sure that the answer can be given like this. I think it has to do to, again, with going back to the person you're talking to. Because you cannot give a person anything more than they are prepared to receive. And therefore, and that is also what we talked about yesterday, you cannot give more of Adventism to a person that they are interested to hear. But they will grow in, if they start to follow Christ and they live in a Christian life and they start to be spiritual and pray and seek spiritual things, their interest for more and more knowledge from the Bible will come. I am totally convinced of that, and God's Holy Spirit will guide these people when they move into a spiritual atmosphere. But it might take a long time before they see it as a crucial question to understand the prophecies of Daniel. Even having said that, some people find it extremely interesting to hear about Daniel too, and actually see that there is a proof in prophecy and history that you cannot explain other than that God has made an intervention in that. And that will appeal to some people, and we shouldn't be too afraid to share something. But so I think that since we are not talking to a uniform population anymore, we just have to look at, who am I talking to? Who is this person? Where do they come from? And as I said yesterday, when you do evangelism, don't plan a program for the city. Plan a program for those five people that you know, and then invite the rest of the city, but it's made for them, so that they can progress in their faith. And I think that is true for how we share Adventism. And we have an agenda that comes out of a prophetic message. And we should not forget that. It's only that we have to put restrictions on ourselves and say we cannot say this to people before they are ready for it, because it doesn't make sense. And maybe for some it would even push them away, because they say, what are these people talking about? You know, it doesn't make any sense. And what does it matter?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Curbing those people who are ultra.
Yeah.
Curbing that.
Yeah.
You've got two.
And I was talking to an evangelist, actually, who had meetings in Australia, and of course they have a similar culture to here, at least by Western culture. And he said, you know, I started these seminars, and the church, the local church, they had many contacts, and so they started some meetings and teaching. And he said, he mentioned particularly one very well-educated woman who came evening after evening, and then after four or five times, she just came up to him and said, I liked your presentations, and it's really interesting. But I have been on the internet and read about the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and some of the things you guys are doing, you know, is so weird, and I just cannot. And some of the things that I said about you, and she said, you know, I'm not going there. She was following him away so far, but he said, I'm not going there because, I don't know. We have to be honest about who we are. And what can I say? I sympathize with your question. But there is not an answer saying do this and then you are ready.
I believe there isn't a direct answer, but you find that there are some people who are so aggressive on the one side,
yes,
and so apathetic on the other.
Yeah.
Aggressive on the one side, right, and on the other side, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you're faced with these two kinds of people,
yes,
who you have to work with,
yeah,
in helping people outside,
yes,
and you're faced with this conflict,
yeah,
and it's very difficult, especially when the television and the internet come up with fanaticism. It makes our life even harder.
Yeah, that is true. And but there are also issues, I don't know if I should go into that. There are also issues that we have to talk about, because there are issues that we have in our church to talk about, which the world also see. Let me just mention one example. I think I'm going on thin ice now, a little bit, and this is not part of the topic really. But when we say that Jesus is coming soon, you know, that is a strong part of Adventist belief in one way. In another way, we all are, whether we like it or not, we all have to admit that we have said it for 150 years. I know that when my grandparents, who got married in the 20s, yeah, they discussed whether or not they should have children, because there were persecution coming and Jesus would come soon. And that is it's getting close to 100 years ago. And we can have that discussion, you know, you can tell many episodes through history, and you know them as well as I, you know. The people in the 50s who said that Jesus is coming soon, and if you ask them, what do you mean, 5 years, 10 years, were they right? No, they were wrong. The people in the 70s who said that Jesus is coming soon, what do you mean, 5 years, 10 years, they were wrong. And they were all wrong. And how long can you say that Jesus is coming soon and be credible? And I'm not making a ridicule of our own church. I'm standing in the middle of this church and I'm a part of it. But this is something that we are facing. And when we are honest about ourselves, we have to say that, you know, when I was a youth in Oslo and was standing on the street, 16-year-old, and handing out the newspapers we had printed in the church about the truth, I was so certain about everything, and I was so confident that everything was right and that Jesus would come soon. And now I'm 55. And it's just part of the truth of our church that we have said it for a long time and it hasn't happened. And the church, the world around us know the same information. Maybe not specifically about what we are saying, but they know this is happening in churches and beliefs, and somehow there is also a time when we must say truthful things and humble things about ourselves. And I think it is when we do that that we actually come across as real people and true people, where we talk about humility and authenticity and authenticity. And so, you know, maybe this just creates more dissonance. But you know, and maybe I'm answering your question more than I should, and further than I should. But we need to talk about it, because it's part of us, and we have to be real, because it's only when we are real and honest about both ourselves and everything else that we can bear a testimony to how what God is doing in our lives and what is happening, you know. And these sort of issues makes us into seekers and not only into answering machines. And we become seekers together with other seekers. And that is really the approach to truth that people can resonate with in the world. Please.
Björn, you're indicating that as truth holders, and as the Adventist Church believe it is, and as we as members of the Adventist Church believe we have at least a revelation of truth, that we should be more focused on understanding other people and joining their journey in discovering the spiritual God and truth. And this seems to be calling for us as individuals to become a lot more sensitive, a lot more curious about the people that we're trying to witness towards. And I'm wondering, have you come across evangelism training programs that focus on equipping us as members to increase our understanding and awareness of those that we're trying to communicate with, rather than simply teaching us how to get across our message as fast as possible in the shortest time?
I think that you know, the programs that is called Contagious Christians, I'm sure you know that, it's quite good, because it talks about, you know, witnessing in a combination with also listening, and what else? I don't know if you can come up with one more, but...
Speaking as a pastor, I'm sensing there's a gap in there's a need out there in refocusing what we're doing, and that we should start experimenting.
Can I add to the honest a bit, a little bit? And sometimes people ask me, that was when I was a pastor or a leader, what do we believe about such and such? And then, of course, they probably mean, what is the church's official position on this? But there is a little bit of an irony, because when that person asks, what do we believe, and want me to state it back, it is as if, tell me what I believe, or what I should believe about such and such. And I usually ask back when I get a question, I say, what do you believe about this? Well, I don't really know what I believe. I'm not sure that I understand this right. So then, okay, that is what you believe. You know, I can tell you the official position, but as far as you are concerned, you are not sure. That is okay. And there are some elements that we can teach our members about over and over again. For example, tell us more about Daniel and Revelation. And in any church, you will ask, what shall we talk about? There will be a certain group of some people who say, teach us more about Daniel and Revelation. And they have heard it 20 times already. and they could hear it 20 times more, and they will not probably get it. But they think it is important, so they want to hear it again and again and again. But if it is not a part of you, it is not what you believe. And this is also related to being real. Because what the are you following me? Do you know, does it make sense? That, you know, when you are sharing something, you have to share not the official version of something, but you have to share what you own in your own life. And that makes an impression, but an official statement from an organization doesn't mean that much to people these days. You say, no, I don't know all the arguments for keeping the Sabbath, but I know this argument and I know this argument, and I know that in my experience keeping the Sabbath has been an enormous blessing. My whole life is different because I keep the Sabbath. That is you, right? Even if you don't have all the official stuff around it. You can take any doctrine, you can take any lifestyle issue and say, this makes sense in my life because of this and that and that. And that is a testimony, and that is real, and that is talking about life and reality. That is, we have to learn to be real people, not only members of an organization. And I'm not saying that it's bad to be a member of an organization. I'm just saying, when you give your testimony, you can only give that which you own, that which you own yourself. And this is also true for the doctrines and that. And that's also why different Adventists will give a different story, different stories from each other. Not that they are in contrast to each other, they are maybe supplementing each other, but still they are a life story that is real. And that is truth. That is lived truth. Truth in the sense that I can understand that. I can take that experience and integrate it into my own life.
It just shows how important the Sabbath school is.
Yes.
Where we're systematically studying what the Bible says about whatever the topic is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we need ourselves to go deeper and deeper into the Word of God and to get to know Jesus Christ more and more and more.
Yourself.
Absolutely. But still, our story will be our story. Yeah. You had a question back there? I'm sorry about you. Those of you who have come in late, we are sort of at the conclusion of something we did yesterday, so maybe it doesn't make all that much sense to you guys, but you're welcome anyway. And yeah. So,
can I?
Pardon.
Something that's occurred to me is when we talk about evangelism, witnessing, whatever. I think that word has multiple meanings depending on who's saying it. Just as you were talking about your own personal experience, I think we have our own personal understanding of that word. I think what you're talking about here appeals to me because I agree with the philosophy at the back of it, but there is another school of evangelism that says that our purpose is to tell people about end days events, whether they like it or not, whether they're listening or not. You're the watchman at the gate. Your job is to tell people what happens beyond that is not important, but that's not the point. The point is to say it. Whereas what I think where you're coming from is that tends not to work. And if you want to change people's lives, you have to come at a different route. So how would you deal with the watchman in the gate type of shouting at people philosophy?
Well, you know, there are so many different people out there, and there are actually some people who are prepared to hear that and to hear Bible prophecy and to hear what the Bible says about the future and are very much interested in that. I don't think they are a majority in this country. I don't know people that well in Scotland anyway. But where I come from in Scandinavia.
Can I just follow up?
I think there are people who would listen to that and be interested in that. And, I know some members, they tell stories like this. You know, I took a taxi the other day and I just started talking to this taxi driver and our conversation immediately came on to what is happening in the world now, and I shared some of the prophecies that we have as a church, and he was so interested, you know. It's real, so I'm not saying it's wrong.
But what I was more getting at is there's a school of evangelism that says it doesn't actually matter how it lands. It doesn't matter if the taxi driver pays attention. It doesn't matter whether people think you're an idiot. What matters is that you say it.
Okay.
So it's about me saying it to you. What you do with it doesn't matter.
My responsibility is over when I give the message to you. It's up to you to make the decision, but my responsibility is over.
Yeah.
I fulfill my responsibility.
Yeah, well. As a general method, I think it's quite naive, I think. I'm sorry to say, use a word like that, but I think to just say things out in the air and just saying you take it or leave it is not very reflected. If we don't think about the person that we are talking to, then we sort of have lost the Christian perspective on talking to other people and witnessing for Christ. And sharing Christ isn't to get people to believe certain things about the future. Sharing Christ is to lead people into a new life. The life that God has prepared for people, led by the Holy Spirit, into new values. And these ideas, you know, we are not presenting a historical program that people have to understand a certain line of events that is coming in the future. Okay, that's interesting, and we believe that God has told us something about the future, and the most important thing is the coming of Jesus. But we are in the business of leading people into the kingdom of God, which we talked about yesterday in our divine service, the kingdom that has come in Jesus Christ, and a new lifestyle, a new way of living, because you live with God as your king, and you live with new values and new ways of treating people. And we are that's what we are leading people into, not some scheme. No. And we are changing hearts. That's what our business is, to change hearts. You cannot change hearts without connecting with people and being genuinely interested in their lives and sharing time and be together. And just to say, you know, say a statement and go away, well, maybe God can miraculously do something about that statement. I'm not saying it's impossible, but really it's not evangelism.
Has anybody done any research into how the early Christian church evangelized the Gentiles, who were as alien as the people out there are alien to us? Has anybody done any research into how the early Christian church did that, or are there not many records? The Bible doesn't say a lot about it, I admit, and I wish the Bible did say more about it, because it would help us today. But has there been any other historical research done into that? Do you know?
Well, there has been a lot of research into that. there has. And of course, the first function that was when the gospel came into a new area was the apostolic, you know, the missionary. One person like Paul coming into a town and doing the public thing. I mean, making a stir at the central marketplace, because that was how communication was done. You had to shout up in the marketplace, because that's where public announcements came that way. and then gather people who are interested to hear a little bit, like, not Speaker's Corner, but a little bit like that, and get people together in a local hall or a home or somewhere. And that was, of course, the initial establishment. And sometimes Paul stayed for 1.5 years, I think it was, wasn't it, in Ephesus?
What he told them.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have much of that, do we?
No.
The essence of it was, of course, Jesus' resurrection and the meaning of his life, and of course teaching them a different life. And I think there was the Old Testament was their scriptures, so they learned about the will of God from the Old Testament and seeing the prophecies about Jesus. But how churches grew, oh man, I don't think I can answer you as well as I should. But we there are many indicators that says it was often, to start with, many of the poorer people and the slaves that became Christians, and many wealthy people and slave owners became Christians as they saw the change in the lives of their servants. But I don't think it was a method as such. And evangelism isn't a method; it is a life. It is relationships to other people, and evangelism happens as we are genuine people with other people. Again, we are not talking about programs. You know, what program did they have? Maybe they didn't have a program. Maybe they just were people. And we talked about that also yesterday. Evangelism isn't a program that comes from the union. Evangelism is meeting people and being real. Yeah. Now, it was over here and then back there.
You mentioned previously, like you said, for 150 years we believed, about 150 years ago, that Jesus is going to come soon.
Yeah.
And it's still part of our message that we believe that we live in end times.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask, isn't Bible teaching that there should be a different kind, let's say, an urgency in evangelism in the end times, something different rather than in the times when it was not end times? So if there is such thing, should we have kind of different approach? Thank you.
Different approach than what?
Let's say when people were living and it wasn't considered its end times. Well, mm-hmm. Apostles were saying that Jesus is coming soon.
Yeah.
But they also knew that certain things have to happen.
Yes.
And so it's my guess that they lived and they knew that they're going to live their lives,
mm-hmm.
more or less, and Jesus is not going to come before certain things happen. And now we live in a time when certain things have happened, and we say it, like, say Jesus is going to come in 5 or 10 years. So if we believe in this urgency that signs have been fulfilled, shouldn't we have a different approach to evangelism? Let's say if we knew for sure that Jesus is going to come in 10 years, should we be doing something differently if we live in the end times? In terms of evangelism.
Yeah. Well, I think it's urgent that we all do our witness. There is an urgency always, even if Christ is coming tomorrow or in 10 or 20 years, there is an urgency because people need to know Jesus Christ now. And I think maybe that should be our motive more than this date setting or even the prospect of time frame, because it becomes hurtful to ourselves to continue to say something that doesn't become real, in the sense that you have the story about the shepherd boy who shouted wolf, wolf. Do you know that story?
Yes.
Yeah, everybody knows it. And you know, when we cry wolf, and sometimes we can have preachers and come and stir up an atmosphere of urgency, but that urgency can only last for a while, and you can only have urgency in your life for a while, but then things will normalize. And that's how it is. And I don't think we do ourselves a service by all the time saying, Now we have to really get going, because now it's going. Do you remember the story about the story that Jesus told about the faithful servant? You can read that in Matthew 25. The end of 24, where he, in his speech about his second coming, and he says, the faithful servant is the one who do what he should when I return. And we have to come as grown up, mature Christians, hopefully, we will just do what we are called to do, because Christ is our Lord. And we serve him, and we serve him day by day, and we do our best. And we don't need to panic, you know, and say, maybe he's coming tomorrow, and then clean the house and everything. And then, but we just do what we should do. And talking to this church yesterday, I mean, there are so many positive things happening here, and it's hard, but you are serving. I don't think we are in the long run served by creating an urgency more than the fact that we know that Jesus is coming, and he can come tomorrow. In my perspective, and many places in the world, there are great awakenings, and things are happening, even if we are struggling right here now.
And
I don't know.
And I think you've given us a lot to think about. What I'm hearing is you saying that our motivation should be the incredible love that God has for lost people.
Yeah.
If we have that love, that would drive us far better than a sense of Christ coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
It would change us inside. So we're not doing it out of guilt and all the other less ideal motives, but a true compassion. But we've only got a couple of minutes before the break, yeah. And so what I'm thinking is that there's a couple more people who want to ask questions. Okay, this lady over here is.
It's about evangelism. When should we do it? But we should do it with every opportunity we have, because Jesus might come in 20 or 50 years time, but this person may die tomorrow or next year and will never get to know Jesus, so will never have a chance to go to heaven. That's why we should do right now to everyone, because even myself, I don't know when I might die, and it will be my, well, for me, Jesus coming, because I will die, I will go like to sleep, and then I just will wake up when Jesus comes. So it will be for me a second coming, you see. That's why we never know. When you hear sometimes your friends are dying so young age, and it's like, yeah, and they didn't know. Yeah, shame.
Yeah, good.
more an observation. I'm interested in this two approaches, and the best analogy I can think of in my head is if someone is in a burning house, you will run into the house and you will shout in their face, "Fire, get out now." Whereas if someone isn't in a burning house, you will go in quietly and calmly try and sell them fire insurance or something. Is that not the two approaches? There's a school of Adventism that says, we're on fire, get in there, shout at them, do it now. There's another school of Adventism, of which I'm a part of, being a third generation Adventist, that says, we're not on fire, I'll sell you some fire insurance. And it's a much slower approach. That's my hopefully helpful analogy, I don't know.
I'll sell you a box of magic. Yeah, see what you mean. I think I. Pardon?
We should just spread the love like Jesus did and help people.
Yeah?
It's our lives that bring people to Jesus.
Yeah, she says that it's our lives that bring people to Jesus, how we live, and that's also very much true.
Okay, thank you very much, everyone, for being part of this program. And as Bjorn said earlier, sorry for those of you who came in a little later and weren't able to get the context of what we were doing. We've had a very, very rewarding day yesterday. And some of the most rewarding time we actually had was over the drinks break at the end of the day, where we were able to continue to ask questions. So we're going to invite you to take a break And I'm going to invite Bjorn, if you join us for drinks, and anyone has further questions, please to gather around and ask them.